It is KZSU Stanford, and this is Ron E. Beck. That's a brand new Bay Area release by Ron E. Beck. Not Ronnie Beck, but Ron E. Beck. Drummer and singer, and sitting next to me in the studio right now. Ronnie, great to have you back here because you've been here before.
That's right, a few years ago.
That's right, and you've come back with a wonderful new record that's, boy, you're cutting it up. That's, that song right there, Hum Daddy, you said that's the one we're pushing, man. Play that.
Yeah, that was that's if there were still singles, and I still might release this as a single. It'll probably be the first one. I'm seriously thinking about just pushing this one song right now.
Well, you know how that goes. You got to put it on the internet.
Yeah, that's
a single. And watch it blow up. You know, and get that 9 million hits, and then everybody wants it. All of a sudden, you become a star, and the rest is history. Ronnie, we're gonna go back and talk about the connection of the influence that influenced you to write that song. But just briefly, would you introduce yourself to the audience? Ronnie Beck, you've been here in the South Bay for quite a long time, but where are you originally from, and how'd you get your start in music?
Well, originally from Omaha, Nebraska, and the cliche is they got black folks in Omaha, and yes, there's a huge African-American population in Omaha, so the north side of Omaha is predominantly black.
Okay.
And there's quite a few famous folks that have come from Omaha.
Like who?
Well, Buddy Miles is from Omaha.
Really?
Johnny Carson's from Nebraska. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if he was Omaha. Peter Fonda and I went to the same high school together, not
really?
At the same time.
Omaha, Nebraska, Peter Fonda?
That's right.
That's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So there's been a few folks that have come through there.
And you got into music at what age?
Well, I come from a musical family. My mom was a jazz pianist and singer, and actually ended up retiring as an educator. She retired as a principal, but it was music in our house. In fact, they used to call our house, or our home in Omaha, the music mecca. That's all the neighborhood kids would come through and learn music. Because in those days, there weren't a whole lot of actually, there was still music in the schools. But you'd learn what you learn in school, and then you want to get the real life experience. So you'd come to our house, and there was always a bunch of guys and girls hanging out, interested in music. And my mom mentored us all, because she knew music. And she made sure we learned it right. And those that didn't want to learn it didn't come over much anymore.
Now, do you have siblings?
I have two brothers and two sisters.
Wow, five kids in a family, huh? Did everybody play or sing?
We all did at one time. The only three of us actually stayed with the music. Actually, four of us. There's two sets of twins in my family. I have a twin brother, and my younger brother and sister are twins.
Interesting. Whoa.
So all the twins stayed with the music, and then my sister, that was the only single child, is the one that actually ended up making the most money.
You and your brother ever perform? Your twin ever performed together?
Yeah, we did a thing about 3 years ago. There used to be a place down on Morgan Hill called the Divine Jazz and Wine. Really nice venue. In fact, I had both of my brothers with me. My twin brother, he plays B3 organ. Yeah, he's a monster. So we did a thing down there, man, and turned it out. We did a Friday and a Saturday, man, and it was like people went nuts.
That's amazing. Now, did church play a part in your musical upbringing?
No, it really didn't. I mean, even though I was raised by my mother and my grandmother, and my grandmother was a very religious person, but we didn't really grow up in the church because we went to a different kind of church. We did go to church, but not the traditional Baptist church or the Holiness church.
Uh-huh. That's interesting. So it's kind of a different kind of a story. It's not the typical one. And just in case you just tuned in, we're talking to Ron E. Beck, a South Bay resident for quite a while now. It's been quite some time, hasn't it, that you've been in South Bay?
Since 71.
There you go. That's 40 years. That's 41 years.
That's right.
That's a long time. I was going to jump to the Bay Area, but no, let's go back now. So in Omaha, did you get your first experience of playing in public there, or was it until you got out here to do that?
No, it was in Omaha. We were actually, my brother and I had a trio, a jazz trio.
Uh-oh.
And this guy, Phenom on the guitar, he died in 1987, but he's kind of like an underground favorite, a guy named Billy Rogers. He was an incredible guitarist.
Mm-hmm.
And he's from Omaha, and he was in that George Benson, Pat Metheny camp, you know, Pat Martino. He was a really avid jazz player. And we had a trio together. In fact, Billy was from the West Side. As a matter of fact, Billy's uncle, believe it or not, is Warren Buffett.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and
oh,
who still lives in Omaha.
The Oracle of Omaha.
That's right. Anyway, so Billy would come down, and we learned how to play together, and we started playing in clubs on the weekends when we were still in high school.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And so 71 was when you came out here. What brought you to the Bay Area?
Another friend of ours had actually come out here to join a band, and he called me and my brother up, and the band he joined, the drummer, in fact, Sandy McKee was a drummer in that band who went and played with Cold Blood. This was when Sandy left and went and joined Cold Blood, and they needed a drummer and an organ player because Sandy quit, and they fired the organist. And my friend called me and said, hey, man, this band needs a drummer and an organ player. And guess what? My brother plays organ, I play drums. So we came out and joined that band, and we've been here ever since.
What band was that?
It was called Blue Magic. There's been a few groups called Blue Magic, but this was a band called Blue Magic.
How long did that last for you guys?
About a year and a half.
And then did your brother stick around like you did, or did he go back home?
No, he's still in California. He actually stayed in Northern California for a while, but he's gravitated towards Southern California. He moved to L.A. and did the whole session scene down in the 70s. He was the first called bass player, of all things, in L.A. during the 70s.
And he's the one that plays Hammond B3.
Yeah, he's played bass. Actually, he started on drums, went to bass. When he went to bass is when I started playing drums, and then he went from the bass to the organ.
Wow. You have a similar story to Maceo Parker.
Wow.
Because he was all over the radio over the New Year's weekend when he was playing here in South or North Carolina, but him and his brother, and got seen by James Brown and, you know, picked up. And it just this classic story of, you know, sliding doors. One door opens, one door closes. You go somewhere, something happens.
Yeah.
So you got here 71. That lasted about a year. What did you? How did you pursue a musical direction after that?
Well, one of the first people I met from actually he was from, lived in California. Was a guy named Clifford Coulter, who's an organ player.
Oh yeah, legendary.
Legendary, and he's like he and I hit it off from day one, and. He and I hung out quite a bit through the 70s and the 80s, you know, until we kind of went different paths. But I was hanging with Clifford a lot, and another guy from Oakland named John Turk.
Horn player.
He's a trumpet player, and he's an organist as well,
right.
Keyboard player, and who's now the musical director at Glide Church in San Francisco.
Oh, this I did not know.
And okay. He and Clifford both are at Glide now.
Did you guys all play together back then?
Oh, yeah. We had a trio. We used to call ourselves John Turk and the Third Street Annex.
Oh, man.
And we were blowing up Oakland in the early 70s.
Oh, so you got to be ejected right into the real main vein.
I got turned out, man. I went to Oakland, man. And it was like in those days, it was just in the beginning of cool and pimps and players and street life for real.
I mean, sure.
And I was indoctrinated in that era, and I learned quite a bit.
Man, Ron E. Beck is the guest. He's got a brand new record out. And it's kind of what we call a self-release, right?
Yeah.
You put this out. It's not on a label. It's your label. It's this is you. And
actually, I did have a help with this one. A guy, Dewan Muhammad, actually owns Life Force Jazz Records. He's building on quite a catalog himself, and he helped me get this out.
So. Oh, did he? Is it on his label officially?
We kind of put it on both.
Okay. And Ron E. Beck, Baby Boomer's the name of the CD. We did just hear Hum Daddy, and you made a call while the song was playing and got reminded of what tune it was by Johnny Guitar Watson that influenced you, and I could hear it in the guitar solo in that last song. Of course, you guys were going for that. As soon as I heard that, I realized, oh, they're going for the Johnny Guitar Watson guitar for sure.
Well, you can't go wrong when you do that.
You can't. That's right. And speak about, and we're going to play that very song that influenced that your last tune, Baby Boomer, by Johnny Guitar Watson. But talk about his influence on you. He influenced a lot of people, and really, his influence goes real deep. But what about him on you?
Well, it goes back to what we were just talking about, that whole street life thing and players and people of the night. You know, Johnny had that kind of persona.
I mean, sure.
He always, you look at a picture of him on an album cover, it's like, that guy looks like a pimp.
Did you ever see him?
I never saw him live. Never got to meet him. I would have given my little finger just to meet the guy.
Good thing he's not still alive, man. You've got to be careful what you wish for.
Exactly.
That let's do this. Let's play this. This is Real Mother for You, and this was the inspiration for, I guess it's kind of your single, your latest single. It's not single yet, but Hum Daddy. So here's Johnny Guitar Watson, picked by Ron E. Beck, right here on KZSU's Blues of the Feeling.
wanna buy a new car, but the price ain't right. Ain't that gold? Be a damn sight cheaper. Yes, it would. Started riding the bike. Listen, they're making milk out of powder. Yeah, they are. Got the babies crying. Poor baby, they know what that stuff is. Rent's gone up higher. Yes, it is. Got the parents lying.
I'll pay you tomorrow.
Lord, it's a real motherfucker. Yeah. Make you wanna run for cover. Yes, it will. And if you look, you will discover. Yeah. Lord, it's a real motherfucker. Good dog. Listen, got to go to a disco. Throw your troubles away. Dance to the music that the DJ play. Well, all right. And then the lights come on. Yeah. Like you knew they would. Got cold. Gone home and face the music. That don't sound too good. Ain't that cold? Listen. Lord, it's a real motherfucker. It'll make you wanna run for cover, yeah. And if you look, you will discover, yeah. Real
the way you shake when you dance all night. Hey girl, my leash is long. Ooh, you got me thinking about doing wrong. Uh-oh, I done bit the bait. Just like a dog behind a fence, standing here barking at the gate. Come on, fellas.
Bow Wow by Ron E. Beck. Catching up on some old reminiscing here off mic. And I have royalty in the studio, ladies and gentlemen. I didn't even know it. Sometimes you need to do your homework better. But, Ronnie, speak about that song. That's the first song on the CD.
That's kind of one of the three or four songs on the CD that's more traditional blues, you know, 1-4-5 kind of thing.
Leaning that way.
I don't consider myself a blues singer, although I love the blues because as far as I'm concerned, that's where it started.
Sure.
And that's why a lot of the younger guys from in Europe, in England especially, man, they all were listening to the blues, the Beatles and all those guys, Rolling Stones, they were all listening to the blues, American blues.
Well, they got to see it up close and personal.
Well, because you had to go to Europe to get your respect. I mean, it's
exactly.
Unfortunate that it's one of the few, it's one of the only two true American music forms. Blues and jazz were both created in the United States. And you got to go out of the United States to really get your props.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't realize that the difference between the Rolling Stones and the White Kids in America, or the Beatles and the White Kids in America, were the Rolling Stones and the Beatles, all those young kids, John Mayall, they had physical access. They could go to a club and watch and talk to Muddy Waters, Sonny Bill Williamson, Howlin' Wolf, Memphis Slam. For white kids in America, they were actually shielded from it because all those guys, those blues guys, they only got to play in the black part of town. for so many years, and there was a separation wall, and a lot of people never thought that whole thing about the British invasion. Where did they come up with it? Well, they met those guys in person.
Exactly.
They got befriended by them. Those guys taught them. That was the big goal that they got, that we didn't get. Now you. And I like what you said about you don't consider yourself a blues person, because nowadays so many people want to jump on that blues bandwagon, whether they are or they aren't, because there's blues has its own radio, blues has its own festivals, and there are a lot of people that don't have anything to do with the blues at all, but they want to call themselves that. And I think in your case, you're right, you're not a blues singer. You don't play blues on purpose, but I think where you come from is a blues tradition. And that's why I wanted you on the radio show today, because I think whatever you choose to do, it's going to have that blues piece in it. That's part of your DNA.
Well, as I've gotten older, my appreciation of the blues has gone way up.
There you go. You've heard more of it too, huh?
I heard it a lot as a kid. My grandfather, both my grandfathers, my step-grandfather and my real grandfather, I mean, they had 45s. 45 RPM disc. I mean, both of them had serious collections of blues.
You got to hear it?
We heard it when we would visit them, but even in the African-American community, blues had a stigma attached to it. You know, it was about street life, and
right.
It was about people doing crazy things and cutting loose, which was true, but if you were in a religious family, it was taboo to listen to the blues.
Yeah.
You know, you could listen to Mahalia and all of those people, but don't bring no blues up in the house.
Right.
But I'd go over to my friend's house where they was drinking beer and drinking whiskey and playing blues loud and got my props and learned what the music was about that way, you know, on the sly.
Yeah.
Because grandma didn't know. If she had known, I'd have been in trouble.
Ron E. Beck is the guest for the hour. He got a brand new CD out called Baby Boomer. And you wrote all the, you wrote most all the tunes. I saw Grandma's Hands on here.
That's Bill Withers. I've always loved that song, and I really also liked the way we did the song. We kind of put more of a rock delta edge on it, if there's such a thing.
Definitely. And I have a favorite on here too, and it's your song about current events.
Somebody.
That's right. And before we get over with this interview, I want to play that and have you talk about it, because there's not enough of that kind of songwriting going on in current R&B and blues. I think there should be more comments on current events in our society and our world. Coming up though, you have a song called "It's Over." Why don't you set this up?
Well, just to clarify the record, I co-wrote a lot of this album with a couple of my good friend songwriting partners, and I also had some writers contribute to the project, which I was really honored to do, because one writer in particular, who's I've been trying to get him to write a song for me for years, and he shocked me. He sent me a song one time, and I said, "Wow, man, I like that song. That's great." He said, "Yeah, well, that's for you," and it floored me.
He wrote it for you.
He wrote it for me and my wife, actually. And then my good friend Danny Beckinsini, Danny B as they call him, he and I did a fair amount of writing on this. And then that one that's going to be the single, Hum Daddy, was actually written by a guitarist friend of mine named Dave Gonzalez, who's kind of an icon in the South Bay, really, really fine guitar player. And he also wrote the song for me. We were at rehearsal one day, because he and I were playing together the year before last. And he says, "I got this song I want you to check out, man." And then he played it for me, and it was kind of a demo he'd done at his house. I said, "Oh, that's pretty cool." And then he gave me the lyrics, and I was reading the lyrics. I said, that's kind of like the kind of stuff I like to talk about. He said, "Well, I wrote this for you, man." So,
wow.
Yeah, and it really touches my heart when I have friends that do that.
Mm-hmm. And under your own name, how many releases are there out there?
This is actually the third release.
It is, okay. Yeah. I wasn't sure of the number. I didn't want to assume, but this is good. This is very good. It's fresh. Let's listen to this now. It's called "It's Over," Ron E. Beck, and get back to this interesting interview.
got to learn. Not gonna be your teacher. I'm tired of getting burned. Just can't seem to reach ya. Oh, no, no. It's a shame. I know the game. It's over. Got to live my life. Not gonna be your preacher.
E. Beck from his brand new CD Baby Boomer, made right here in South Bay, right?
A lot of it was done in Los Altos, and I finished it up in the South Bay.
What's in Los Altos? A studio?
A friend of mine has a nice studio in his home.
Oh, very cool. Ronnie Beck, you got out here in 71?
Yes.
By 74, well, after having played with John Turk and Clifford Coulter, you got a phone call. And you got asked to audition for Tower Power.
That's correct.
And I guess the audition went well because you got hired.
Yeah, my friend Bruce Conti, the guitar player with Tower at that time, used to come to our gig because the guitar player in our band was taking lessons from Bruce. And Bruce, when they were in town, he would come and sit in with our band. And, you know, he really enjoyed our band. And then he just asked me, hey, man, Dave is leaving. You want to come audition for the gig? I said, well, okay. I didn't.
It could be daunting, couldn't it?
Well, you know what was really funny, man? At that time, you know, I knew who Tower of Power was, but I wasn't like a real Tower of Power fan back then.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
they had become a little more mainstream at that point too.
No, not yet.
Not mainstream, but I mean, they weren't that greasy, funky Oakland. The first two albums were kind of, you know, gave them their street cred. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And then they got a little more popularity, and they got better with each album. Definitely, it just got a little. It seemed to get a little more. Almost not pop oriented, but you know what I mean.
It got more sophisticated.
Yeah, there you go. That's the best word I could. Yeah, that's a great word for it. So you got that gig, and you played there for 3 years. You toured with Tower.
Yes.
How was that experience?
It was the highlight of my life thus far.
Now those guys are voracious writers, and the horn section, like you mentioned off mic, that band is about the horn section, not just about the singer. And they write prolifically and really write. And we've been talking off mic, and you don't read music. And so how did that work out when they would write a song out and everybody's reading the charts, right? Did you have to kind of fake your way through it, or was it a thing where you just you nailed it and it was okay with everybody? It's like, or did they press you, hey man, maybe you should learn how to read? Or
no. Actually, the only guys that were really reading in the band was mostly the horn section.
Oh, that was it?
Yeah, the rhythm section pretty much did head arrangements and things, and a lot of the horn arrangements were as a result of what the rhythm section would come up with.
So was Rocco the bass player in the band when you were there?
Yes, Rocco was there first, and then Victor Conti came in afterwards.
Okay. Oh, Balco.
Yeah. That's okay. He's my friend. And
oh, yeah.
Talk about Victor.
Oh, no, not in a bad way at all, because it turned out that whole thing was, well, anyway, we don't need to get into that, but he is known for that for sure. But from Tower Power, 3 years on that, and when you left them, for whatever reason, where did you go from there?
Well, they fired me.
They did?
Yeah.
Why?
David wanted to come back.
Oh.
For one. And number two, at that time, I was acting a fool.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was young and crazy, man. I was in my 20s. I didn't care much about anything but having a good time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. And so you got off the road with them, and where did you go from there?
Well, I didn't really get off the road. I left them, and matter of fact, through Steve Cropper, of all people, he called me and turned me on to Marilyn McCoo and Billy Davis Jr.
How did you know Steve Cropper of Booker T and the MGs and so much more?
Steve actually produced the last album that I played on with Tower.
Okay.
Yeah, so matter of fact, I was the guy to pick Steve because they were saying, man, we need a producer. The record company said, you guys need a producer. So I said, hey, Mimi, why don't we call Steve Cropper?
Now, did you know Steve before then?
No, but I knew his reputation, and he had done some things that it seemed to be a good fit.
Sure. Asked Steve Cropper to produce your record, of course.
Yeah.
So he produced that Tower record you were on.
He produced
the last one you were on?
The last one I was on, We Came to Play.
I didn't realize that he produced that. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And so he turned you on to Billy Davis Jr. and Marilyn McCoo, and you went on the road with them?
Yes.
This is quite a situation we have here. You really dug yourself in. And that's some heady stuff. And you said you were still in your 20s.
Yeah.
So you must have really been feeling your oats, man. What happened when you got off the road from Marilyn McCoo and Billy Davis Jr.?
Well, after that, actually, I was still in the band, but Marilyn had got sick at that time, so they weren't really touring. So I was just kind of in the band, sitting at home waiting on a phone call.
Uh-huh.
So we just kind of went our separate ways, and not long after that, I got a call from a sax player, a friend of mine, Danny Hull. And he says, man, I want you in my band. And I says, okay. And he took me out to lunch one day, and he talked about what he wanted to do and all this. And you know, we had a similar vision of where we wanted to go with the music.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yeah, sounds like fun. And it started out as the Danny Hull Quintet. Then it became Danny Hull Quartet. And then eventually it became Danny Hull and Spang-a-Lang. Then it became just Spang-a-Lang.
Oh, yeah, that Spang-a-Lang was famous around these parts.
Oh man, we were the band in the 80s for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and got to stay virtually in town. You didn't have to go get on a bus or in a van and travel.
No, just putting a lot of miles on our individual cars.
Mm-hmm. Playing around the Bay Area,
all over the Bay Area, from Napa to Monterey.
How long did that last?
The Spang-a-Lang is still together. like Tony still does gigs at Spangling, and Tom Pollard too. Tom is playing with Tower now, and he and Tony get together and they'll put together a version of Spangling and still do gigs. But I stayed in the band for about 6 years, from 81 to 87.
Wow.
And it went on for years after that. The hiatus of the band was during the time when I was in the band, as far as I'm concerned.
And where did the 90s find you?
90s found me doing local gigs, doing whatever kind of gigs I could get in the area. You know, some of them good, some of them not so good.
Things were, by the mid-90s, things were booming because of the dot-com situation. And I know there was a lot of gigs around and a lot of stuff going on. Were you concentrated primarily on, like, club dates, you know, funky band situations? Was jazz a part of it?
Not a lot of jazz, more what they call top 40 stuff, kind of old school R&B, that kind of stuff. And jazz fusion was kind of waning at that point, because in the 80s, the fusion thing was really huge. Also, during the dot-com era, a lot of the gigs at that time were like corporate gigs. That whole corporate thing was huge.
Yes.
You know. And,
did you get to taste some of that?
I tasted some of it. I hated it.
I hear you. You right, know, a lot of rules and regulations.
Well, the money was good, but it wasn't about the music. It was just about making money.
Right.
And that's never been my motivation.
Ron E. Beck is the guest, South Bay resident since 19. You've been in South Bay the whole time since you got here?
Yeah.
Never wanted to leave?
No.
That's a trip. And you got to play up in Oakland, too. And, you know, we all know if the Bay Area has a flavor, it's called Oakland.
That's true. It's really true.
Now, let's touch on this song. The night I took your CD and listened to it, this song just clobbered me like a ton of bricks. It's called Somebody. It's about current events. It's about the situation of the world and the situation we all find ourselves in. We can all relate to it. Set it up a little bit. What motivated you to write these? Are these your words?
Actually, my friend Danny Beckinsini wrote this song.
I see. Okay.
And he says, man, I got kind of a political song here I wrote, man. I want you to check it out. And I heard it. I said, man, I love it.
Yeah.
And it's about America. It's not about the world. This is about what's happening in the United States. Matter of fact, his inspiration was Hurricane Katrina.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're all to blame for that. All of us, because since we didn't all stand up and make our government do the right thing, they're just going to keep it up. They're doing it in New York right now. Don't get me started on that. Let's listen to this. This is Ronnie, and this is you singing.
Yes.
Danny's words. It's a wonderful tune called Somebody. Ron E. Beck on KZSU.
Yeah. This is a little story about life in America. La, 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 la. La, 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 la. It's not all right anymore to keep quiet and ignore. Can't sit still and watch this go down. Never see the rain. Then there's a flood. Can't feel that pain, 'cause it's not their blood. Tired of these lies, this hate. Have to change it now before it's too late. Somebody tell the truth. Somebody gotta tell the truth sometime. Somebody tell the truth. Somebody got to tell the truth sometime. Da 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 da. Da 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 da. Da 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 da.
trusted are doing this wrong. Always throwing stones and never take the blame. Cast the sins on others and hide behind his name. Yes, they do. Tired of these lies. Oh, so tired of this hate. Got to change it now before it's too late. Somebody tell the truth. Somebody tell the truth sometime. Somebody, anybody, oh, can tell the truth sometime.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Right now, we're going to change things up just a little bit. We want to slow it down. Matter of fact, y'all my friends out there, right? Because I'm about to put myself on blast, share a little bit of my personal business. So I want y'all to listen closely to these lyrics because you might be able to relate to the story.
One, two, three. I left behind. Your heart got broken, so did mine. That was another place in time. But we can't go back and change our lives. From now on, we got to make it right. Cause no matter how hard we try, we can't go back. Oh no, we can't go back. So many ways to make it right. Oh, how I wish you were here tonight. If I knew then what I know now, baby, we might have taken a sacred vow. But we can't go back and change our lives. From now on, got to make it right. Done.
now, babe. No matter how hard we try, I've tried a million times, girl. Call me on the telephone. No, I got to leave you alone.
Ron E. Beck.
Yes, sir.
Off his latest CD called Baby Boomer, and that was called Can't Go Back. Were those your words?
Yeah, Danny B and I wrote that song.
Okay. Now, we just got a few minutes left, and we have a Coco Taylor track queued up that you've picked, and you wanted to speak a little bit about...
Well, I want to talk about what I'm about and what my thought process was when we were making this record.
Please do.
As we were talking off the air, you know, a lot of guys call themselves blues artists and stuff, and I understand it. One reason, because the blues umbrella, if you come in under the blues umbrella, it's a pretty big and wide umbrella, and you can kind of go a lot of different directions. You know, if you come in under the jazz, you got to go jazz, straight ahead, or smooth jazz. But if you come in under the blues, that kind of encompasses an old school style of R&B, because contemporary R&B is nothing like the real R&B, like Etta James and those people. That was the original R&B, rhythm and blues, which means it's rooted in the blues. And I feel like my music is rooted in the blues. I pay homage to the blues, and I've learned a lot through listening to that music, and also just digging deep in my own heritage to find out my connection there. So part of the reason I call this record Baby Boomer, like back in the day, is the actual title of the CD. I wanted to make a connection and also give people something to grab a hold to from our generation, the Baby Boomer generation, which typically, or which incidentally is 1945 to 1965.
That's us.
According to Wikipedia, it's 1945 to 1965. So any of you out there that was born during those wonderful 20 years are part of that baby boomer generation. And we're not done. We're not all just getting ready to retire. We're still, a lot of us out here, vibrant, still trying to make a statement in life. And that's kind of where I'm coming from. Like in my band, I have younger guys in my band, and I'm kind of like mentoring them and teaching them and making them learn the old music and the history of where this music came from, so that we can pass it on and keep it going on and keep the heritage alive.
If folks want to get a hold of you, how can they?
My website will be up probably next week, ronebeck.com, ronebeck.com. I also have my teaching institute, REBDI, Ron E. Beck Drum Institute. You can go there, ronebeckdruminstitute.com. I teach drum lessons. I'm trying to build that. So those will be two ways for sure to get in touch with me. And just Google my name, you'll find me.
Ron E. Beck. Ronnie, thank you. Ron, thank you so much for coming today. And thanks so much for the music and everything. We're going to go out with a tune you picked from Coco Taylor, Voodoo Woman.
That's right.
And keep it tight and stay in touch, okay?
You got it. Thanks,
all right.
Bert.
Peace out.
They call me the voodoo mama, and I know the reason why. They call me the voodoo mama, I know the reason why. Lord, if I raise my hand, you know the sky begins to cry. They call me the voodoo woman.